You made it. It's Friday. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. The Blue Jays did not make it to a game above 500. They just keep hovering around. And guess what? The best team in the American League and one of the best teams in all of baseball is here this weekend. And then another one of the best teams in baseball in the San Diego Padres are here next week. So get busy figuring it out. Not that things have been bad over the last week or so for the Blue Jays, but a couple missed opportunities to get back above the 500 mark, to establish themselves as the number two team in the AL East, and just to get on a little bit of a roll here. Julia, how you doing?
Every day is Groundhog Day when the Blue Jays are at 500, and it's starting to get a little repetitive, Blake. They've had, I think, four chances to break over that mark. They couldn't do it. But I don't even want to talk about that. I want to talk about your baseball game.
Oh, yeah. We are above 500 for sure.
Nicely done.
Yeah, season opener last night. It was good. We won 14-13. Yeah, it was good. Yeah. Are you laughing at the score? It's slow pitch. You're not going to have a 3-1 slow pitch game.
Oh, I love it. I love it. How did you do?
I was all right. I went one for two. So anyone who plays slow pitch will know that, like, as summer goes on, you have more and more trouble getting 10 bodies out for each game. People don't show up. People have plans and things like that. So you add extra players to your roster. And then first game of the season, there are 14 guys that show up because everyone wants to play in the first game.
So
I only got up twice. Everyone had to sit a couple innings, but it was good. I went one for two, played second, third, and left field. Didn't make any mistakes in the field. We're good.
That's awesome. That's all you can hope for.
I'm a new guy on the team. So my goal, it was just like don't make a mistake. Don't take anything off the table.
Absolutely. Like make a good first impression. You'll go from there. I know you put in a lot of work beforehand to make sure that you got there in good shape. I'm proud of you, man.
Thanks.
Very good.
I don't think one for two errorless warrants pride, but thank you. We won. The rest of the team did the work. Shout out to those guys. A couple of them listened to the show. So this is the hard part about this is between being like a public person and having a show, and then same with like social media and stuff like that. I could never get away with lying. I would love to come in here and be like, oh, it's 4-for-4 with 3 dingers, hit the walk off. I've accused my youngest brother of, he like always fabricates his sports stuff, and like
really
and it's like I was there when you were younger. Like, you didn't do that. You can't hit 2 walk-off home runs in the same game. What are you talking about? I would love to be able to exaggerate like that, but no, we can't, because it's too public.
Someone would text in 590 590.
Yeah, although I don't look at those, so they'd probably just have to tweet me, or they would roast the heck out of me next game. Okay,
programming, let's go back to Major League Baseball. Then.
Programming note first that I forgot I was supposed to read off the top. Leafs at Panthers tonight, game 6. That is an 8 p.m. start. It is on 680 on the radio or the Sportsnet app or sportsnet.ca/590. On the TV side, of course, it's on Sportsnet CBC, Sportsnet Plus. The Jays-Tigers game is at 7 o'clock. That'll be on 590. Or if you're using the Sportsnet app or .ca/590, it's on the alt stream there. And then on television, it's on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet Plus. So I hope it's not the last time we have to describe to you how the Leafs-Jays double broadcasts are being juggled, but I have a feeling it might be. Sunday's game, of course, would not overlap anyway.
Right.
So even if they make it to 7, I don't feel great.
Yeah.
That Wednesday game was like about as bad of a playoff performance as I've ever seen a team turn in. It's hard to shake that off.
And that's saying something, considering what the Blue Jays did over the past 2 wild card series that we saw from them. But here we are.
Those were pretty rough as well. But this was at least they tried. They tried to do anyway. We don't need to get into Leafs talk. Let's talk Jays. They lose 8-3 because of Lowe and Lau.
Yeah.
Josh Lowe back off the IL for the Tampa Bay Rays, which once again makes them one of the more confusing teams to talk about, because trying to keep track of Josh Lowe and Brandon Lau and not Josh Lau and Brandon Lowe or any combination. You know how you remember which one's which?
J-Lo.
Yes, that's exactly it.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then the other one is different, I guess.
He's the one who's not J-Lo. So Josh Lowe, Brandon Lau. They got to Kevin Gausman. Kevin Gausman had a bit of another rough start. There was nothing you know, nothing screaming at you when you look in the underlying stuff. Six earned runs, though, over 5 2/3. He gets touched for 3 home runs for just the third time in his career as a Blue Jay. What did you notice with Gausman? A bit of a weird one to diagnose.
It was. It was pointed out to me before the show that this is one of John Schneider's favorite expressions. Kind of a weird one. But that is, you know, the best way to describe what Kevin Gausman did. The velo was there for the most part, except for the Brandon Lau home run, in which, you know, it was 92 point whatever was the fastball that he threw him up in the zone. That starts up the trouble, but you can see that, you know, usually that's the one thing that we're looking at. Chris Bassett, who joined the broadcast yesterday, said the same thing. What do you look for in a Kevin Gausman start that will indicate to you how things are going? And he said fastball velo, and that was there. I don't necessarily think that these were terrible mistakes that the Rays hit out. I think it was just they had a very, very solid game plan. They knew what they were looking for, and Gausman was not perfect. When a team like that comes in, and, you know, they've seen, obviously, Kevin Gausman is no stranger to the Rays at this point, especially to Kevin Cash. There's certainly some new guys to this team, but they kind of knew what to expect. They kind of knew where he was as well. The splitter was not where it needs to be. It hasn't really been throughout the season. The Rays were ready for whatever Gausman threw their way, and that I think was the biggest difference maker.
Yeah, it's interesting that none of the big damage came off the splitter, when if you look under the hood, the splitter continues to be the thing that's just a little bit off. You mentioned the fastball velocity where it needs to be. The one to Brandon Lau is just, I mean, 92 up in the zone, even if you spot that well, and you look at the swing that he put on it, he was all over it. And then the one to Josh Lowe was 96, but it was kind of like right in the nitro zone, like middle in. That's where a good hitter's going to get to it. The Cameron Meisner solo shot was a slider that he just kind of reached out and got. I know you think you see it as kind of a bad sign when Gausman is going to the slider a little bit too much. He threw 8 of them yesterday, so not a crazy amount, but, you know, it was in the mix there, and Meisner caught one.
Yeah, it's not too many, right? I think he was kind of getting by. You look at the swing and miss. It was also there. He struck out 6, I believe, in the outing. But in my mind, and listen, I've never asked him about that. I don't even think that, you know, necessarily he would give me the most forthcoming answer. But it does seem like when the splitter isn't moving the way that it does, or that it should, because the splitter is moving, it's just not how he wants it to move. It's moving more laterally than having that late break that is really what has made it lethal in the past. That is when Gausman needs to get a little bit more creative with it. And so he was trying to steal a first pitch strike with the slider in the zone a little bit. The Rays are going to pick up on that. And that, to me, is when you start seeing a little bit more of those sliders, maybe it's an indicator that, hey, the splitter is not breaking the way that it should.
So I actually did ask him about this the other day, because it was something that I picked up on prior to this start. He actually had the most left-to-right movement on his splitter of any pitcher in the majors who was throwing his splitter. So generally there are a couple of different ways to throw a splitter, but we see a kind of two different ways that it profiles. And you see on one end, you have the Jeff Hoffman, Yariel Rodriguez type, where it's more like a fastball and it gets kind of that sinker movement where it goes left to right. It gets a lot of arm side run from a righty. And Jeff Hoffman and Yariel Rodriguez are fine with that. With Hoffman, it's a feature, not a bug, because he's throwing, and he considers it more of a fastball, whereas Kevin Gausman considers his splitter more of an off-speed pitch. It's more about how it plays off, how the fastball looks. Same with Bowden Francis. It's going to be that rise fastball up and the splitter that kind of drops off of it. But in Gosman's case, when you have that much arm side run, the way he told it to me is that's an indicator, you know, you I guess if you were like unbelievable at the splitter, you could get both.
Right.
You could get the depth and the left to right. But in his case, he cares way more about the depth, the vertical break, how much it carries the bottom part of the zone. That is way more important to him than the left to right. And he actually said, I don't necessarily like it, is when I asked him about the arm side run. It's not all the way there. And yesterday, the left to right movement was down. He controlled it a little bit better in terms of keeping it on a straighter line, but it didn't get that extra depth. And I think an interesting stat to look at when it comes to just how much the splitter is like a game of not even inches, but like millimeters, because it's baseball type of pitch, is he got 7 swing and miss on 22 swings yesterday. That's fine overall. Like if you did that with your fastball, you'd be happy, but that's low for Kevin Gausman and his splitter. And the swing and miss on the splitter has been a little light this year in general. He leads the league by a good margin in foul balls.
Yeah.
And what that to me says, like, you can say good job to the hitters. They're staying alive. You know, you go back to the Yankees game where obviously you got the pitch count up, you know, a lot of fouling off, two strike stuff. That to me, though, when you lead the league in fouls, and he had 27 foul balls against them yesterday, there is a positive in that guys aren't squaring it up. Guys aren't making good contact. They're having to struggle to stay alive. But the other part is, you know, we're used to a little bit more swing and miss there. We're used to a little more put away. And that's particularly true with the splitter. So that's something notable for me that I'm going to try. 27 foul balls yesterday. That's a lot of foul balls in one game. I believe the Jays had 29 off Pepiot the other day, and that was like the fifth most in the league this year. Mm-hmm. So 27 is going to be right up there too. And on the season, he leads the league like by a safe margin in foul balls. So that tells me it's just a little off, and guys are just getting a little bit more of it than we're used to with the splitter.
That's pretty fascinating, and I think that's a fair read, Blake, in that, yeah, maybe it's just a little bit. Maybe it's just fine-tuning, getting back to where he once was, and he spoke about that. He knows that he needs to go back and watch film, and, you know, he pointed out his release point as maybe an area where he needs to look at a little bit more and see what he's doing, how he's tunneling that pitch to play off of the good fastball. The fastball has been good all year. It's been his most consistent pitch all season long. And so when you see numbers like that, and then when you have a guy who's really owning up to it after the game and saying, yeah, I need to be better, I need to be more consistent, and, you know, basically he has 5 or 6 days to work on that now, then great, he's going to get another chance. Kevin Gausman is a very, very smart pitcher, and he's a very talented pitcher as well. I am not super concerned. I do think that he is going to figure it out. If he figured it out last year and ended the 2024 season of the way that he did, I think it was 7 good starts to end his season, he's going to figure it out this year.
Yeah.
And he seems to be a little bit closer even than he was at this point last year, when the splitter was really not there at all and not generating any type of swing and miss, any type of positive results. So, yeah, it is unfortunate that this is where we are on May 16th, but it's also not, in my mind, reason for huge concern.
Yeah, 4.459 ERA so far is not where you'd like it, and obviously this start and the Yankees start are pretty big blips there, but for the most part, yeah, you're not as far off as he was last year. This is a guy that has so much runway and track record that
absolutely,
he will figure it out. He'll find the depth on the splitter. He'll figure out the right fastball, velocity balance. It'll be more than fine eventually. Just, you got to talk about it when it happens. Two other notes on Gausman. We set up before the game how big the running game could be in this one potentially. Now, it didn't come back because you gave up 3 home runs. It didn't come back to bite you quite as much. But he did. He was the victim of a double steal.
Yes.
That Nathan Lucas helped erase. Nathan Lucas, in addition to having a pretty good catch out there, also had an outfield assist. So Danny Jansen had what would have been a 2-run single, but Nathan Lucas coming up with a big assist there to erase at least the backside of that double steal. And then we should mention as well, this didn't seem to affect his mechanics. He didn't use it as an excuse after the game in any way, other than saying he was a little worried about his unmentionables. He did take a 160-mile-an-hour comebacker off the hip.
Yeah.
Probably at least a little relevant to, you know, again, it didn't seem to affect the mechanics. He didn't say anything. But anytime you take a ball, one of the hardest hit balls in all of baseball this year, and it hits you in the hip, I think it warrants mentioning as
Yeah,
well.
Listen, they had Mason Fluharty up just in case after that, but Gausman didn't need it. Obviously, he completed 6 innings there. Blake, I was a little confused when he said that he was worried about his private area. What did he mean?
I'm not going to take the bait on that on the air. What are you? I said the unmentionables because they're unmentionable.
All right, let's go.
Yeah,
let's talk about the offense.
Clean it up. All right, it's Friday, but it's not that much of a Friday. Clean it up, Kreutz. Okay, on the other side of the ball, the Blue Jays hit a bunch of home runs. It didn't result in a lot because they were all solo home runs. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr., he obviously listened to the show yesterday. You were not happy at the lack of power despite the uptick in walks. And he takes one, talk about hard hit balls, 115 miles an hour, 17 degree launch angle. And I know no one cares that much about these, like the launch angle and things like that. But I did want to highlight that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has now surpassed Giancarlo Stanton as the line drive home run king. I went and pulled the numbers since the start of 2021. Vlad now has 31 home runs that I would call line drive home runs, 20-degree launch angle or lower. That passes Giancarlo Stanton, who has 30. Nobody else has more than 20 in that time.
That's really unbelievable.
31, 30, and then Pete Alonso's next with 20. And Pete Alonso obviously hits the ball extremely hard, but he also hits big tanks that go 300 feet in the air a lot of the time too. Vlad's are more of the variety of it's hard enough, but is it going to have the height to get out? That was a pretty, that was a very Vladimir Guerrero Jr. home run right into his own bullpen.
Yeah, it takes a very, very strong hitter to do what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does consistently over and over again. And that homer is just the latest example of that. It got out of the ballpark so fast. You barely had time to blink and be like, oh, okay, that was a homer. And that was a classic Vlad homer. But you did mention, Blake, just the lack of runners on base. That's tough. When you hit three homers and you have no one on base, and I think they went 0-for-4, right, with runners in scoring position.
Yeah. And more notable than the 0-for-4, they killed their ability to get guys and runners in scoring position because they grounded in the three double plays.
So many double plays. And so when you start getting something going, and you have to credit Littell here, he pitched a good game, obviously, definitely was able to exploit a little bit of the Blue Jays' weaknesses and things that we have seen this year that came back to bite them a little bit. It was a little bit, they kind of got away from that when the offense started to get going. We saw a little bit of the troubles that were there early on. Yes, the power is still there, but when we talk about putting everything together and having everything click in order to build a little bit more of a win streak, in order to get back over 500 and start building off of that, that's what I mean by getting everything to click at once. The Blue Jays are going to need a few of those games if they want to get over this hump. It seems like this could be it. They couldn't get anyone on base, and when they hit the big home runs, there was no one on base, and the Rays just kept tacking on runs. It was absurd.
Fickle. All we said for weeks was all we wanted was home runs. We got 7 home runs in this game, and they're wrong team, wrong kind of home run. The bases are empty. Fickle. Addison Barger hit the other one. I mentioned Nathan Lucas hit one on a tasty splitter that was just like, here you go, middle on that chase Zach Littell from the game. Although, like you said, credit to Littell. He made it into the eighth in that one. And then the one Addison Barger hit was a splitter that was kind of high and away, just walloped it. Not much to say about that one other than, yeah, this is what we're talking about with the bat speed and how hard Addison Barger swings and just the power potential that's there. Even if it's not, 40 home run power potential, you see when he gets a hold of one, kind of guesses right on one left up in the zone, just walloped it.
Yeah, there's always going to be swing and miss to his game, and I will say that even in that at bat and the at bat prior, the at bat after that, I was a little baffled by the type of swing and miss that we get from him. But this is who he is as a hitter, right? I think you kind of need to accept that Addison Barger is going to be aggressive because when he gets into one, it's out of here.
Yeah,
and that's just part of it.
Like, I haven't graphed it myself, but I would imagine if we graphed swing speed and how hard you generally hit the ball, it's going to correlate with swing and miss. Right, because if you're swinging that hard, you're swinging that fast, you kind of sacrifice the ability to adjust your bat path and how long your bat is carrying the zone and things like that. So worthwhile trade-off, I would say, mostly because he isn't chasing out of the zone very much. Speaking of chasing out of the zone, back to Vlad. He also had 2 walks in this one. Yep. So over his last 25 games now, he has 19 walks over his last 25, a 423 OBP, and his OPS in that time is up to 940.
Yeah, that's really good.
It had been not a lot of extra base hits of late, but zoom out and look at the last 25 games. He is chasing outside of the zone at a career low rate. And weirdly, this is one I got to dig in on a little bit more, but just in general, swinging way less than at any point in his career. Only 42% of pitches he's swinging at, which is like by far a career low. So whether that's, that has to be a confidence in waiting for your pitch. You can dig in and see a couple, hey, that was right there. Waiting on your pitch and the result, 940 OPS over a 25-game stretch.
You can't really argue with that. I mean, it's good to have those types of numbers laid out because I think, I'm certainly guilty of this, is just looking a little bit too into what's happening right now. And that's what generated the conversation yesterday. Is it a problem that we're not talking about Vladdy when we're talking about power and a renaissance for this offense, et cetera, et cetera? But Vladdy is just waiting for his pitch, and he's not going to try to do too much, as Chris Bassett pointed out during the broadcast. He is, I don't know, it's just like the profile of a serene player right now, but who also has the potential to be aggressive and to hit home runs like he did. He's a very, very strong guy, extremely talented. He's seeing the ball very, very well. And so why wouldn't he wait for his pitch? Why wouldn't he be patient?
Right? Yeah, and these ups and downs in the power output, even when he's playing particularly well, is why I think if your expectation setting for Vlad, you know, the low 30s home run guy who hits around 300 is just more who he is naturally than that 48 home run season that we saw. I would love to see a 48 home run season, but this feels more like in range of, you know, low 30s, hit around 300, going to have some spells where you're not hitting for a ton of power, but you're still getting on base at a good clip. That's, I think, you know, we have enough of a sample to say that's more true to who Vlad is than 48 homer masher, as fun as that was. Okay, one other negative before we take a break here and get to know the Tigers. Another tough one for Anthony Santander. He came up in the first with Bo and Vlad on first and second, and then popped out, really heads up play for Bo Bichette taking third base on that infield fly, basically, with runners on first and second and a pop out to the catcher. Didn't get anything there. And then in the eighth inning as well, Zach Littell got chased. There was the Lucas home run, and then Bo hit a double. Littell gets chased. Vlad takes a walk, so 2-on-1 out, and Anthony Santander down there as well. He is still has an OPS below 600, hitting below 200 from a batting average perspective, only OPSing 536 with men on base. And get this, in high leverage spots, so high leverage defined based on where the win probability is and the point in the game you are and stuff like that, his weighted runs created plus is negative, which mathematically I still don't understand, because it's supposed to be scaled where like 100 is a league average hitter. So I don't really know how you get a negative one, but he has a negative weighted runs created plus in high leverage spots. He's got to get going. I know there have been a lot of positives with the offense, and they talked about, hey, it's May. Anthony Santander will get going. They really need him to get going.
This is the guy that we really need to be worried about right now. I don't think it's that uncommon, Blake, for a player, even a player of his caliber, really, to join a new team and struggle during that first season. It's not unheard of, right? But the fact of the matter is that he's still batting in the heart of this lineup, and the Blue Jays have given him plenty of opportunities to hit with runners on base. And that eighth inning at bat, he just missed out on a home run. He hit a ball extremely hard before he grounded out that just went foul. I understand the Blue Jays weren't flat out unlucky yesterday, but they didn't necessarily have luck on their side either. And so when something like that happens, I would imagine that it takes a second for you to sort of regroup and get locked in again. But he was on swing mode, first of all. He had no business swinging at that, I believe it was a slider, low and out of the zone. He shouldn't have swung at that, period. But swing mode, he just missed out on a homer, just the best.
You're too geeked up for Friday night hat giveaway. Swing mode, night mode, every kind of mode.
Sorry. Yeah, maybe I do have that, the hat in my mind right now.
You are night mode. You came in here today saying that you didn't feel like you were in night mode. But
it's true. I don't know. It's Friday, man. Fridays are... Our shows are going to get really weird on Fridays.
Especially once we go to 2 hours. It'll be just a weekly recap of my slow pitch game. Okay.
So Santander, I don't think he should have swung at that pitch. I understand that he had just missed out on a homer, a pitch prior to that. You need to lock in. You're too good to just, you know, roll over and settle for advancing the runners, I guess, especially with the game as it was at that point. It still seemed like a comeback was possible. That kind of killed it.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Okay, Tigers are here. They're tied for the best record in Major League Baseball. After the break, we're going to get to know them a little bit with one of my favorite radio play-by-play guys in all of baseball, Dan Dickerson. But before we do that, we've got a backyard boost for listeners across the GTA, and it all starts with playing it safe before you dig. We're giving away a $100 home hardware gift card thanks to our friends at Ontario One Call to help you kick off your outdoor projects the right way. Before you plant a tree, build a fence, or put in that new pool, you have to do one thing first. Click before you dig. Submit a locate request through Ontario One Call before digging for any size project. Text the code word click to dig to 590-590 for your chance to win a $100 home hardware gift card and make that backyard project a reality the safe way. Again, text click to dig to to 590-590 for your shot to win. Standard message and data rates may apply. That's a wrap on the Home Hardware Ontario One call. Reads and stories about my time as a Home Hardware employee. Let's take a break. One of the best in the biz, Dan Dickerson, joins us on the other side as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. The Toronto Blue Jays dropping 2-3 to Tampa Bay Rays. Things do not get easier because arguably the best team in baseball comes into Toronto. Now it's the Detroit Tigers. They are tied with the Dodgers atop the majors with a record of 29-15. They just swept the Red Sox, including a pair of walk-offs that were called by our next guest, one of my favorite play-by-play voices in all of baseball. It's Dan Dickerson. Dan, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you guys?
We are excellent. Not quite as good as Tiger fans are probably feeling right now. How are things around the Tigers? I imagine it's got to be a fun start to the year, especially considering kind of just a second chapter off the end to 2024 they had.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. You guys know. I mean, the momentum from the end of 1 year, whatever that might be, doesn't always carry into the next. And I think that's what's impressed me the most is that, you know, that 31-11 finish that got them to the clinch on that last Friday night of the regular season last year, and it feels like they just carried that into this year. But, you know, AJ and Scott Harris knew that that wasn't a given, and so I just think what they did sending these guys into the postseason is like, okay, you like that feeling of being in the postseason? This is what we need to do now to get better in the offseason. That's how they talk about the offseason. It's a time to get better, not just prepare for next year. And in whatever way each individual player has to do that, I think they have. And it's the same brand of baseball, only at a higher level. I'm so impressed. People keep saying, you know, is this sustainable? Well, they're probably not going to outscore their opponents by, you know, 300 runs this year. The run differential is pretty staggering. But this is kind of a culmination or just something they've been building toward with all the work that they do, you know, the hitting department, the pitching department, and how AJ talks about first, young players have to learn how to win today's game. Okay, that sounds coach speak. But what does that mean? That means you got to figure out a routine. You have to figure out how to go about your business every day and how to prepare and put together a game plan. And for the pitchers, kind of the same thing. And then it's next step, how do you win a series? You take advantage of your opponent's weaknesses. What are our matchups today for the next 3 days? And that's what they really concentrated on for years under AJ. But now that's hitting home. They win series. And it's just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, Dan, all the credit goes to the players here. We're seeing so many impressive individual performances, guys really taking the next step in their development. But you kind of touched on it. I want to see if you can expand on it a little bit more. How much of AJ Hinch do you see in this continued success for the Tigers here?
Oh, it's he's driving this thing. I mean, there's just no question about it. He doesn't want to take a lot of credit for it. And hey, it's the coaching too. But he's assembled an impressive coaching staff that's very diverse in terms of the skills they can teach and their backgrounds. And as he said, I always want every player to have someone to go to because sometimes you just need that different voice, right? And it's so he'll always give credit there. But he just lives, you guys know, lives and breathes baseball, but he's always looking for, I mean, he's scouting the next opponent. He's looking for, where's that edge? And I think they've just kind of embraced the whole idea of everybody on this roster is going to contribute. And would he like to have 6-7 regulars at every position? Yeah, maybe. But now he's got a few regulars and a whole bunch of guys who can play at least two positions, some 4, 5, or 6, and then he can move his chess pieces around and get what he got in the ninth inning the other day. Andy Ibañez and Justin Henry Molloy deliver the win in a walk-off the other day facing Aroldis Chapman. They both come off the bench in the ninth inning because they are prepared to do that. They have learned how to prepare to get ready for maybe a ninth inning at bat against a guy who throws 101. And so, yeah, it's all driven by AJ, and it's the buy-in. He talks about it a lot, but it's real. And now these guys are playing a team brand of baseball, very much aware of trying to leave the game in a better situation for the guy behind them, whether you're a pitcher, whether you're a hitter.
That's a great mentality and philosophy for a team to have. It's so interesting, too, the way the season has started for the Tigers, because last year, every time A.J. Hinch came up, at least during that, you know, final 40 games and through the playoffs, it was all about the bullpen management and opener and bulk follower, and Tyler Holden is going to be – he's going to pitch in nine different innings over nine different games. We don't know. And then this year, they actually have – kind of a rotation. They haven't had to cobble together the innings through the bullpen as much. How have you found that change in general, but AJ Hinch's ability to better kind of weaponize the bullpen, given that he doesn't have to ask them for as many innings this year?
Right. And there's still, you know, there've been a couple injuries that I think is now kind of back to full health with Brisky and Brebbia coming off the IL. You know, last year was out of necessity, right? I mean, they traded away, you know, Flaherty at the trade deadline and a reliever in Chafin. And they just, I mean, it was such a non-obvious solution to what looked like it just a hopeless problem. It's like, let's see, we have two starting pitchers and 58 games left. What's going to go on here? And literally, they, as you said, covered it with two starting pitchers and then this crazy, you know, bulk reliever plan. You know, Herter came up. And I think what AJ said we learned out of it is that just because we kind of just thought, okay, way outside the box, how can we turn this into a strength for our team? How can we maximize every player's strength? And instead, it was an eye-opener for him because now you're looking at players differently. Herter struggled in the first inning in the minor leagues, for instance. Now we're just going to have a guy pitch the first inning, maybe a couple outs into the second, and then Brand Herter comes in, and he was phenomenal. So now this year, less of that. And I do think it allows him to be a little, you know, he's got great flexibility because all these guys, he trusts just about every single one with a late inning leverage situation. But a Brand Herter now can come in a little different role, but he can work 1 to 3 innings instead of 4 or 5. And then he's learned how to be ready the next day if he works just 1 or 2. So I don't even think it's hit its stride yet because Brisky's been out and he's still getting back to where he wants to be. Same with Brebbia. And I think they went into the Boston series. I think the ERA went up a little bit, but as the bullpen with the lowest ERA. So not as much swing and miss as some other back ends of bullpens, but really effective.
Yeah, the pitching staff, you know, it was impressive last year, and especially after the trade deadline. It's been impressive this year. One guy who hasn't necessarily been able to get it going and, you know, pitch to the level that he did last year is Jack Flaherty, right? He was good enough. He was right. Traded to the Dodgers at the deadline. And then his past outing here, 4 home runs. He pitched just 3 innings against the Rangers. That's been a problem for him, it seems like. What is different from the guy that the Tigers saw last year compared to this one?
Yeah, the numbers are really odd. That last outing, giving up 4 home runs to the Rangers who weren't hitting with power when they came in. I mean, there was the worst offense in the American League. I think still is. That was just weird. By the time the 4th one flies, I'm just looking at my partner going, do they have his pitches? I mean, it was just weird because he does not give up. I mean, he's going to rockets. So a bit of an oddity. I did talk to him after, and he's not too concerned. It's just kind of like last year they worked on his delivery, just a small tweak, and this is where Robin Lund, one of the 3 pitching coaches who's got a background in, you know, how the body moves as a professor, worked with him on it all stems from the fastball, right? It's not that he has to throw it a ton, but everything works off of that. And the fastball just hasn't looked right the last few days. It doesn't have that life. And he's like, yeah, I'm kind of working on some things. And he was about to head out to a bullpen the day I talked to him, and they've always got something to work on. They've always got an idea. So it's not like it needs a big fix because the 2 starts before that, if you go back and look, he was absolutely dynamite through the first 5 innings and then came apart or at least got knocked out in the 6th. 3rd time through the lineup has been a problem. And I think that's where he just figures if he can get back to what he did in those first 5 innings of 2 previous starts, dynamite curveball slider combination with fastball location, he should be fine. The stuff looks fine. I think there's just something going on that they're working on in his delivery. But that start against the Rangers, that was very odd.
Yeah, that's an outlier one for sure. And at least, you know, if you're looking for a point of confidence, if you're the Tigers, it's at least that he's striking guys out still. So you're not, you know, suddenly
swing and miss. Yep.
Yeah, not dropping off the table. So we'll see him tonight. We'll also see Jackson Jobe in this series. Came up last year for that cameo late in the season. One of the coolest things you can do in a playoff run, right? Call up a prospect and have him pitch at a relief instead of starting. But what have you seen from him through the first seven starts of his major league career?
Yeah, learning. He's just learning. The stuff is good. I thought last time out was maybe the best stuff we'd seen in terms of mixing all of his pitches together. You know, two types of fastballs, cut slider, a new curveball, and he's still learning how to mix it all together and how to sequence and pair pitches off each other. But we saw swing and miss, and that's what I've been looking for. You'll see the five walks, and you'll see the walk rate is high. I think that's coming down. If you look at his first pitch strikes, he actually throws a lot of first pitch strikes, and what he's learning how to do is, you know, what did the Tigers preach? Win, you know, get to leverage, get to two strikes, win the race to two strikes. He does that, and then he loses hitters a lot. And he knows it. It's like, I'm just, you know, trying to make that extra good pitch and get the swing and miss where I have to learn how to live with maybe just getting weak contact in a two-strike count. So, I mean, those are the little things. And we saw it again last start. It's almost every start. You'll see him get ahead 0-2, 1-2. And the count will get to 3-2, and not always in a walk, end in a walk, but you know, the count went to 3-2 instead of finishing it off. Last start, it was four walks against Devers and Bregman, so it's kind of like, okay, that's understandable. He was really great against everybody else, but those two veteran quality hitters kind of scared him out of the strike zone.
Yeah.
So it's just a learning curve, but the stuff, guys, is really good. And that last time out, I'm really interested to see this start, because last time out was the swing and miss, seven strikeouts, and just reminded you, oh yeah, there's still so much upside with him.
Yeah, putting guys away ends up being one of the hardest things you can do in the major leagues, right?
So
whether you're younger.
But Andy Koufax, I started striking guys out when I started to stop trying to strike guys out. I mangled that, but you know, when I stopped trying to strike them out, that's when I struck them out. So yeah, I mean, that's a process. But this kid is really good at analyzing his own starts, taking one or two things out of each start and going, okay, now I'm going to work on that.
That's a brilliant quote. I'll definitely keep that in mind moving forward. Just moving over to the offensive side here, Dan. Also, just so much good to talk about with the Tigers. And I wanted to start with a couple of walk-offs to sweep the Red Sox. You know, you've had a ton of fun calls during your time with the Tigers, that Javi Baez walk-off homer among them. What are you seeing from Javi Baez right now? This is quite the impressive resurgence that we're seeing here.
It's one of the truly most impressive comeback seasons I've ever seen. Because, I mean, it wasn't just bad offense the last 3 years. It was like a 560 OPS if you combined his last two seasons. With a lot of at-bats. Last year was injury shortened, but that was a lot of non-production over 600-700 plate appearances. So, you know, he did say the hip. My concern was, okay, he had a hip surgery, but I'm like, was that really the reason his offense had dropped so sharply? Well, it turns out maybe not the whole reason, but yes, a big part of it. As he talked about, he had to now cheat to get to the fastball. And once you start doing that, you know, you're vulnerable to the slider. Mm-hmm. And he's still vulnerable to a slider. But I think what the Tigers did was really, there have been so many pieces to this. So first of all, I think AJ gave him really good matchups to make sure that he didn't face a lot of guys with good sliders. Started against every possible lefty that the Tigers saw. So start to build the contact. The chase was down. He did see a lot fewer sliders through a week ago. It was like, you know, from 37% pitches were sliders to 24%. Okay, so now he's staying in the strike zone a little better contact. Didn't have a position. Three different guys get hurt. Another guy goes sent to the minor leagues because he didn't hit enough. He wasn't on the depth chart. I mean, he wasn't fifth on the depth chart. He wasn't even on the depth chart for center field. And then he's like, yeah, I'll play center field. I've always wanted to. And he's like, okay.
Sure.
And, you know, he is the best athlete on this team. And you know, you notice it, how much better he's moving, it's especially talking to coaches. Like talking to Joey Cora, who has a little Joey Cora camp every morning during spring training where he's pounding ground balls at guys. He's like, oh, he's moving. It's night and day how much he's moving better. So he takes to center field, starts making plays, starts making some contact, not hitting for power. He goes, yeah, I know, I've got to hit for power. But it's kind of that process, right, to get back to where you want to be. He'll still chase, but the chase is down. And then he started hitting for power on the last road trip. And to see it all kind of build toward that 2-3 homer game or 3-run homer game with the walk-off, it was just phenomenal. That's one of the great moments you'll ever see. That was a great game. And it's been awesome to watch. I was a doubter. Right. I mean, that's just clear going into the season. So all credit to him, all credit to the Tigers for not giving up on him. I mean, it felt like it could be, if you're willing to eat the contract, a DFA situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think they thought that, but I mean, it felt like from the outside, it felt like that could happen because it was so bad. And now to see this, he's a very popular teammate. You know, that clubhouse loves him. It's just been one of the great stories in baseball this year.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the nice thing about this is even if it, you know, even if he doesn't stay this hot, you bank the wins. They don't take them back if the batting average comes back down.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Oh, it's going to, you know, it's going to level off, but dang.
Yeah.
you banked it. You're right.
Dan, so look, on the hitting side, yeah, Baez bouncing back is nice. This team is going to go at least a little bit how Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson go in the middle of that order. Cole Keith as well. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to ask you about another young name who's kind of this season, at least on the defensive side of the ball, established himself as someone to include in that core. And that's catcher Dylan Dingler. He has the best arm of any catcher in the league. All the defensive metrics like him early on. He's hitting just enough. How impressive has it been to you to see? I know catchers tend to figure it out a little slower, a little later sometimes. So for him to come up and have this bigger role with Jake Rogers down, how impressed have you been by Dingler?
Oh, he's good. He's really good. And the defense is, that was the word on him coming up. This guy in every way, even the stuff, especially the stuff for AJ that you can't measure. How does he call a game? How does he handle a staff? There's so many little nuances that go into that, right? And he always got high marks, and now they're seeing that. And I think AJ's always going to be pushing his catchers to, you know, get better and better. But he's a creative game caller. He handles a staff. He's got a presence back there, and I think that matters. So he kind of checks all the boxes on the defensive side. You know, he hit – it was really big numbers in the last – it was about 50 games before he got the call up at Triple-A last year, hit for average, hit for power, draw walks, didn't strike out a whole lot. You'll notice it's one walk and 30-some strikeouts. He drew his first walk the other day, and the dugout erupted. It was hilarious. But what the Tigers talk about all the time is, hey, if they're the only way you start to draw walks is if you just hit pitchers out of the strike zone. And so that's in the process right now. They're in the strike zone, so he's not just going to take. And he's attacking, and he's got a nice hard hit rate. Lots of line drives, some extra base power, and he's hitting, well, the other day it was up to 280. So kind of rock solid production at the plate. And I think, you know, the walks are going to go up. He's got that track record. But just a good kid, good athlete, and very impressive how he's kind of stepped into the everyday role, mostly everyday role with the injury to Jake Rogers. And Jake's probably going to come back soon, and they'll probably split the catching duties, but he's really been – for a guy in his first full year in the major leagues, he's done a lot.
Dan, you mentioned the dugout erupting when Dingler drew his walk there. It sort of just indicates how high the spirits are, how good the vibes are, however you want to put it, right? It seems
absolutely
like this is a good group.
That was a great indicator.
And then when you look at two walk-off wins against a Red Sox team, which, sure, you know, maybe not there yet, but it's a team that's on the up and up here. Alex Bregman getting booed. It doesn't seem like they missed or like they're suffering too much from missing out on Alex Bregman here.
No, it was pretty funny. I thought the boos would kind of just fade as the three games went on, they got louder every time. And then every time he got a hit, they got louder. He had a really good series. He had a nice little exchange you might have seen with Tarek Skubal, too. Like, Tarek was yelling at him from the dugout, "What are you doing?"
There's a lot to boo.
So it was pretty – that exchange was pretty funny. But, yeah, I mean – there's no doubt the Tigers pursued Alex Bregman. Would he be a good fit on this team? Sure. But I think it's always funny. I mean, you know, the move you don't make sometimes turns out to be – I keep thinking about this. I thought about it all three games with Boston every time he got booed. I'm like, well, if he was on the team, of course you'd like to have him. But look what happened because he's not on this team and because of the injuries to Vierling, Perez, and Meadows – it just created opportunities for guys like Baez, like Torkelson, to get a chance to make this team. Torkelson hit his way on. You know, Baez, again, didn't have a position, and the injuries opened up a spot for him. And if Bregman had been on this team, it just, you know, would have taken that bats away from somebody else, like maybe a Zach McKinstry, who's been off to a terrific start. Now he's cooled off, but I'm telling you, his start was so important for this offense when some other guys were a little quiet. Zach McKinstry been a huge part. So, yeah, it would have been great to get him. But the more I think about it, it's like, well, in some ways, it probably helped this offense that they didn't get him, as strange as that may sound. Not that he wouldn't have added, but it just it opened up opportunities. Other guys have taken advantage. And this offense right now, I mean, I was trying to figure out going into the season, you know, 680 runs last year. They've got to get to 710, 720 at least, league average for run scoring. How are they going to get there? Well, they're on pace to score 200 more runs than last year. 200.
That's absurd.
Which is pretty spectacular. And it's kind of that, again, that team concept. It's just kind of feeding off each other right now because they play the game oftentimes 90 feet at a time. And it's a good brand of baseball, but how much better would it be if Bregman were here? I don't think it could be.
Yeah, well, good brand of baseball is right. It's and obviously successful. 29-15, tied for the best record in the majors. Dan, looking forward to this series. Thanks so much for taking the time out. It was great to chat with you.
Oh, nice talking with you guys. Always love coming to Toronto.
All right,
Dan Dickerson, voice of the Tigers on radio. We'll see him down at the park a little later. It'll be Jack Flaherty against Bowden Francis. The Saturday starters are TBD against Reese Olson. And Jose Barrios against Jackson Jobe on Sunday. Now, that TBD on Saturday, we had kind of figured the way this was going to go, given how the last fifth starter spot was handled, given how lefty-heavy the Tigers' A lineup is. And they will platoon a lot, so we'll see some of the extra guys in. But really, it looks like Eric Lauer is going to start that Saturday game after Jose Urena was used in low leverage out of the bullpen last.
Yeah, came in, and he should be ready to pitch out of the bullpen on Saturday based on what John Schneider said. But it would be prudent to give Eric Lauer the start, especially, Blake, against a lineup that is as lefty-heavy as the Tigers.
As lefty-heavy and as, ready to make substitutions platoon-wise. So it's interesting where, you know, Minnesota from a couple years ago is the only other team that I can remember that will, as like that, there was a Minnesota team where Rocco Baldelli would, like as early as like the fourth or fifth inning, if you turn them around with a relief pitcher, they'd get their guys out of there. They
very
stuck to the platoon
that
strictly. We'll see if the Tigers do, you know, Akil Baddoo is the one lefty that comes off the bench and he hasn't really played since, he played the other day, but he just got called up. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we'll see how that spot goes. But generally speaking, Andy Ibañez and Justin Henry Molloy will find their way in there if there's a lefty somewhere. Okay. The other note on the fifth starter spot, Spencer Turnbull made his first start yesterday with single-A Dunedin. He threw four innings. That is his first official rehab. A good sign that he was able to go four innings already. He's obviously been pitching a bunch down there. Not much else going on around the minors yesterday, although Davis Schneider is starting to heat up a little bit. Alan Roden has been red hot at AAA. So nice to see some Buffalo bats starting to wake up just a little bit. Just in case. Okay, so it is Jack Flaherty against Bowden Francis tonight. Flaherty comes in 4.61 ERA. Julia, you laid it out pretty well. He's had a bit of a tough go. Bit of just a weird couple seasons. St. Louis to Baltimore to Detroit to the Dodgers, back to Detroit. And really good season last year. This year, some of the chase and whiff spike that he had last year has gone away. We'll see. Very tough pitcher regardless of what the ERA may say. Bowden Francis comes in struggling a little bit, 5.40 ERA and some of the underlying metrics shouting that, hey, that splitter's got to be better. Otherwise, your fastball can't play up. We've talked about it a lot. Gleyber Torres, the only Tiger who's seen Bowden Francis more than once. Thanks to Dan Dickerson for joining us. Thanks to Amit Mon, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Will I get the day right today since it's Friday?
Let's try.
Talk to you Monday. Have a wonderful long weekend, everyone.